Welcome, my friends, to the Generations Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host, with you. Coming to you from my basement out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado, we engage a family economy and have for, well, at least 20 years. We worked on the family economy vision for quite some time to bring together the family as a unit in which, you know, we can do business together, and it's been a blessing for our family. And we've encouraged family economy through family economics conferences over the years as part of our generations ministry. But the challenge, of course, that most people are not equipped for their own businesses. People just don't know how to be entrepreneurs. They don't think like entrepreneurs. They lack the training and the coaching and the abilities to sell, to grow a business, to understand people, markets, and value. So we're really trained in the American educational system to be part of the big system, you know, plug into the system. So the idea of having a family economy is quite unique. And of course, we don't say every family has to develop one particular business. We could be involved in ministry. We can be involved in hospitality. We might pull together multiple little businesses together, might have 7, 8, 9 streams of income that come into one single family economy. So there's just lots of varieties by which to do business. And one of the blessings in business is that you can combine discipleship and faith and character in the business environment. We've said that before. It's the intent of Deuteronomy 6:7, not just to disciple as you sit down to do geography and geometry, but we disciple, we teach God's word as we walk by the way, as we rise up, as we lie down, as we plow the fields, as we engage in family economy. And the assumption, of course, is that our children are working. And the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work, you nor your son, nor your daughter. So there it is. The assumption being that your son, your daughter have been working, engaged in the fields over the previous 6 days. And that, my friends, has been the way things have gone for 5,950 years until the last 50 years, and we've lost the concept of the family economy. So the family economy is a great opportunity in which to do family discipleship, in which to disciple and coach others in the business environment. You can do this with your employees. There's room for discipling the nations in business coaching. And multi-level marketing is one avenue folks are using for this. In a previous program, we gave a list of the pluses and pitfalls of multi-level marketing, and a good friend of mine, Jim Mueller, has had quite a bit of experience with MLMs, multi-level marketing, and business discipleship as well for the last 25 years. I think I've known Jim for some 25 years, and since 1992, which I'm sorry, that would be closer to 30 years now. Time goes by. Jim Mueller joins me now on the Generations Broadcast from the Phoenix Airport, but he's just going to share a little bit of his experience today. Jim, welcome. Good to have you here.
Kevin, thank you for having me on your program. It's a pleasure to speak with you.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about your involvement. I know you got involved in MLMs back, 30 years ago. It would have been close to 1992 when we moved out to Colorado. Tell us why you got started. What was the impetus at the very beginning?
Yeah, Kevin, you've seen our whole journey, and we actually started our network marketing business in 1992, and prior to meeting you. And really, it was I've been trained my whole life to get good grades, go to college, get a good education, get a good job. I'm a public school guy. I homeschool my family, but we you know, the system just really gears you that way. And I did it all. I did the right thing. I went to the College School of Mines. I got a degree in mechanical engineering. I'd landed my first engineering job. And it was almost day one sitting in the cubicle, Jeff, and then I thought, oh, my gosh, is this all there is? Is this what I'm going to do for the rest of my life? You know, I know we worked for the same company. They actually had guards and a case that was behind you, and I felt like it felt like I'd gotten into the real world and right into prison. It just didn't seem like something I wanted to do for the rest of my life.
Yeah, so you got involved in Amway, right? So that was the beginning. And you've stuck with
it. Yeah, that's correct. I received a phone call from an old roommate from college who was feeling the same way, and got invited to a meeting, and my wife and I at the time were looking for another source of income. She was closing a bookstore. She owned the largest Christian bookstore in the state of Colorado. And we were closing that store and looking for a way to replace her income at the same time. So it's just perfect timing to get that call and get close to this opportunity.
Mm. Well, business has been an arena for evangelism discipleship for yourself, I know, because we've interacted on that many times. Tell us a little bit about what's happened in that arena over these 25 years. How have you taken advantage of opportunities to just evangelize and to disciple in the midst of business?
Yeah, you know, we saw from the very beginning that as we grew our business team, that people were coming into our life. And, you know, we've talked about over and over again when, you know, true discipleship is wading into people's lives. It's not just preaching. It's not just standing, doing a Bible study on a Wednesday night. But when you start wading into people's lives, it's pretty messy, right? And you discover all kinds of things. And we would, as leaders, you know, you kind of become a leader when you're building a team, constantly being asked, how do we deal with marriage issues? How do we deal? It was a byproduct of building a business. And so we naturally, as Christians, referred to the Bible. We referred to principles that we learned. We rapidly began learning more principles because we realized, oh my goodness, we need to be prepared for this. And so it's been a lifelong ministry in other people's lives to teach, train, and disciple. But it's a business, right? So it's a byproduct, not necessarily the primary, objective.
Is it a challenge to keep the two distinct, or are there pitfalls in combining ministry and business?
I think so. I think you never want to promote a network marketing business or any kind of business as your way of discipling. That's not the way you go to market. You go to market with your business. Your business stays, you know, the value of the products and services that you're providing. And it just becomes a byproduct, you know, just like any other business. If you're running a large corporation and you have employees, and obviously ministry and discipleship is going to happen. But I think the pitfall is trying to market yourself as this is a discipleship thing. This is maybe even like a church. That's not what it is. It's a parachurch at best, and you're really, your primary goal is to build business, and then, you know, discipleship just happens. I think that's a pitfall.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about MLMs themselves. And you know the pitfalls. You've watched it for almost 30 years of involvement. Maybe some of the pitfalls. Why the low percentage of those who actually succeed in multi-level marketing?
Good question, Devin. And it is a broad landscape, the world of network marketing. And unfortunately, many of the things you hear and see and you can Google and find out are actually true. So it's hard to argue with things that are true. There are people doing weird things in the world of network marketing, but there are people doing great things. And it's a $100 billion industry now. So we have to look seriously and understand, yes, there are people doing it quite well and succeeding. And so you got to kind of look at all of that together. I think, Devin, the number one reason that people are not successful in network marketing, and I've seen it in my 25 years over and over again, is that people join network marketing businesses and they just don't do any work. In fact, the work that they do is almost immeasurable. They will get excited. They'll come to meetings. They'll, you know, get a business name, get excited about having a website. But you and I know that any business is going to require some sweat equity. You've got to build the team. You've got to build the customer base. You've got to get yourself knowledgeable in the program. And even when those resources and tools are available, people don't do anything, and it's sad. You know, you've shared with me a quote from Ben Franklin in the past that says, either you'll be governed by God or by God you'll be governed. And many people that, like me, who were raised in the public education system and were trying to homeschool our kids and trying to learn how to start a business, we'll start a network marketing business, but let's go, guys. I mean, you got to do some work. And if you are not a good boss for you, then you're going to have a boss your whole life. You're going to need to have a boss. And that's kind of what that quote alludes to. That's the number one reason I think people don't succeed. Secondly, is people partner with programs that aren't proven, or they're new, they're startups, they're figuring things out as they go, and it takes a while to develop a system in network marketing. And you really want to be working with a proven system and with coaches that have proven and current credibility, I think.
One of the things about multi-level marketing is it provides coaching. Is it better coaching than you would get with a franchise? A lot of people do need coaching in order to build a business, and the quality coaching matters, doesn't it? I mean, you've got to have good coaching to make it, especially if you haven't really been raised as an entrepreneur. You haven't been raised in that environment. You have no idea what it is to be your own boss. So to have a coach is really critical for success in most businesses, but especially MLMs.
Coaching is critical. And then there's also this, you have to make things happen sometimes. You're going to get great coaching, but sometimes if things aren't moving forward, you got to think. A great book called Think and Grow Rich. And I don't agree with everything in that book, but one of the things Napoleon Hill talks about, and all great success principles, are you got to use your mind. The 6 inches between your ears are critical. And if things aren't working, you got to move and change and adjust and adapt. And that's one of the things we're really not taught to do in school. We just memorize facts. We answer questions on tests. We get a job. We get a certain job assignment. And there you go. And we're told what to do, essentially. And entrepreneurship, not that way. You're going to have to figure some stuff out. And coaching is wonderful, but that's another element too.
Mm-hmm. What is a good coach? How would you define a good coach in business?
Well, number one, they have to have proven success. So many people today are coaching. They want to be, a personal coach. You go to their LinkedIn profile, and they're doing podcasts and things like that. And you'll say, well, did you hear this guy? I never heard of that guy. Who is he? Well, he's the guy who did this other thing. Well, what did he do? Well, he did that other podcast. Well, what did he do? What did he accomplish in the business that I'm trying to accomplish, or something similar? You've got to look for people that have proven and current credibility, number one. Number two, there's got to be a good rapport, a good relationship. When we're bringing people onto our team, we have an interview process, and I'm looking for somebody that I can work with. I'm looking for someone as a coach that is coachable. When the student is ready, the teacher appears. Many times students just aren't ready. So you have to have both.
Right. Okay. Let's talk about success. And what would you call success? And obviously a broad word, a critical word. There's economic success, but there's other forms of success as well. So what would you call success in business?
Well, there's many, many things that I would refer to as success. For the first 20 years in our business, we didn't have a lot of economic success. We had some, and it was modest. We grew in a lot of other areas, for sure. And the principles, the people skills, the ability to really relate and build rapport. A funny thing about sales is if you want to be good in sales, you have to love people. You have to listen and find needs and fill needs. The creepy salesman that people have this image of doesn't really exist in the free market. The free market will spit that guy right out. So to be successful, you have to be serving people. You have to be filling a need in their life. It's an exchange in the marketplace. And you have to be providing good value. Well, what that does when you start to learn these skills is it permeates everywhere. It permeates success in your family, and you learn to find needs and fill needs with your kids. It permeates your other relationships. For me, a lot of the success I had in the corporate world was due to the principles I learned in business. But you also have to make money in the business. You just can't be in a business and not have it succeed. And it was about 9 years ago that we reached an impasse, and we sought out some real, true, legitimate, current credibility in our coaching, and we earned an offer to work with one of the top entrepreneurs in network marketing out of Raleigh, North Carolina. And since that time, we've had phenomenal success in our business as well. And I think that's a key element. You don't have a lot of credibility in business if that business is not successful and making good profit.
Do you attribute your success to your coach or to the way you responded to your coach?
Well, that's a really good question, Kevin. That's an excellent question. Because I said that before, and it's so important. You can have the best coach in the world, but if you're not ready to learn, if you're not a sponge, I always tell people, if I'm talking to a young man, I might say, I need a 180-pound sponge, sir. I'm looking for somebody who says, tell me what I need to do next. I'm 56 years old, so I'm not fighting people anymore. My coach wasn't going to fight me. He was looking for somebody who was ready to learn, and I was a ready participant at that point.
Hard work, perseverance, essential to any kind of success. What other traits are essential for success in business?
Well, I think I mentioned it. The ability to actually make something happen. Kevin, you can probably recall times in Generations Broadcast. And I remember when you left the corporate world and you went into full-time ministry work with Christian Home Educators of Colorado, and it was a big risk. I mean, but you made something happen. In the midst of an organization that was sort of fledgling and getting along, you turned the corner and you thought about it. You sat up at night, you took notes, and you prayed, and you asked God. And God will help people, but you've got to be mentally engaged in that endeavor. Not just hard. If hard work was the answer, you know, many of our fathers would have been the wealthiest men on the planet, but it takes more than hard work. You have to think, you have to work smart, and you have to have a good vehicle.
And you just have to be really good with people. I just don't think there's any way about that. You have to love people, as you said, and you need to see for their success as well. You have to be out for the other person, your customer and your employee, your customer and your partners in business, both.
Well, and many people make the statement, I'm just not a people person. And that's a horrible thing to say as a Christian, because that's our role as believers. So you're not born a people person or a not people person. These skills are acquired. I'm an engineer. I wasn't trained in a lot of these soft people skills, but you can learn it. And it's the prime purpose of our existence. Nobody's going to be on their deathbed someday and say, I wish I spent more time with my house or my drywall or my Mercedes. It's all about the people we impact in this life and serve and add value to.
Let's talk about family economy briefly. Outside of agriculture, as you know, man, not very many of us are farmers. I have a brown thumb. Mm. Pretty much everything turns brown in my gardens. Thankfully, my wife and my daughters do a better job than me. But outside of agriculture, Jim, it's difficult for families to identify ways in which they can do a family economy together. How have you been able to work together as a family in this endeavor through the years?
Well, you know, it's funny you say that, Kevin, because we never forced or coerced our children to be in business with us. They watched our journey. They saw what happened. They saw the success in recent years. And as they got jobs and started working in the marketplace, almost to a number, we have five children. Four of our five children all came to us and said, Mom and Dad, we want to do what you guys are doing. So what's exciting about that is they've had better success than we had with getting started, more rapid success. We've been able to convey our coaching to them. And yes, they're part of our business teams, but actually helping the overall family economy. Amway has a superb next generation plan where we can amalgamate our businesses together and our children can transfer that leadership as they become leaders themselves. And it's just a wonderful thing to preserve wealth. The neat thing about network marketing is there's no capital. You don't have buildings or properties or equipment. And so it's really just a cash flow that you're inheriting to the next generation. So there's inheritance tax, but there isn't that big capital gain and things like that. So we're very excited about having a multi-generational vision. Even some of our grandchildren are pretending like they're doing meetings in the their parents' Amway businesses someday. So we see this extending to multiple generations as we go.
Do you find that others within your organization are successful? I mean, have you seen them pull out success and you feel that their investment has been well worthwhile?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. For those people that have partnered with Thelma and I and have done the activities that we've prescribed, they've been very successful. Creating what we call platinum level incomes, an extra 50 grand a year, et cetera. That opens up a lot of options for people. Many of them have been able to have their wives come home and be full-time wives. Many of them are homeschooling. Many of them have been able to get out of debt, pay off substantial student loan debt and things like that. And that's one of the biggest joys of this. Zig Ziglar said, you can have anything in life that you want as long as you're able to help enough other people get what they want. That's the key to success in any kind of business is you gotta help your team succeed in something that matters, something that's making a difference in people's lives. And I think that's one of the most fulfilling things about this.
Jim, any last words to share? Anything that, any concerns, any flags,
well,
any encouragements to give our listening audience? We have thousands of families listening. Perhaps this is not the right option for them, but they want to get involved in a family economy. What can you share with them?
Well, I would say avoid the get-rich-quick schemes. Avoid the people who are trying to advertise. You're going to make a ton of money, and it's not going to take any effort.
Right, right.
These are the things that cause all these failures in network marketing is people think it's a lottery ticket. Avoid the hype. Find out what the Federal Trade Commission calls a pyramid. A lot of these programs out there are just money laundering. There's no movement of goods and services. There's no way to pass the person who brought you on. There's a lot of definitions of what's called a legal or an illegal pyramid. And then find a company that has some longevity.
Yeah.
Find a coach that has proven credibility.
Right, right.
And then, for heaven's sake, do the work. Don't be one of these people who said, oh, I tried that thing and it didn't work for me. No, you didn't do anything. Show me your stinking calendar. If you actually were doing the work that was prescribed, it probably would have worked out for you. But nobody blames themselves. You know, it's human nature. So don't get involved if you're not going to take it seriously, if you're not going to put some real time into it. I mean, the beauty is you can keep a job. You don't have to quit your job. You can build a business asset that, in my case, has now replaced my full-time job income after 31 years of climbing the corporate ladder. You can do that. That's possible. But it's going to take diligent effort. It's going to take time. It might take 5-10 years. But it was going to go faster than my 401k, that's for sure. So,
good.
You know, those are some of the pitfalls.
Good. Thank you. Thank you. Jim Mueller has been my guest on the Generations Broadcast. If anybody wants to contact Jim, just email me at host@generations.org. And if it's okay with you, Jim, I'll just forward their emails to you. So, again, just email me at host@generations.org if you have questions for Jim Mueller, who has a wealth of experience just building businesses since the early 1990s. So, thanks, Jim. Appreciate you joining us today on Generations.
Thank you, Kevin, for having me. It was a pleasure.
This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.